is Diana Stinn.
And Jill Mann.
And welcome to our 21st SquatCast!
Woohoo! We got it!
I did! I'm so proud of myself.
So today we have a special guest with us, Deanne Brosnan. She is a homeschooling parent of three, and this is her second year homeschooling. We had planned to have a little parent evening about free-range learning, and unfortunately it ended up being canceled, but Deanne agreed to participate.
Silly lady.
She's sitting here making funny faces and zipping things. I don't know what's up. Anyway, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay, so you have to remember to speak loud so that the entire world can hear you.
But no pressure.
No.
Okay, so let's talk about Chapter 3. What's happening in Chapter 3 of Free Range Learning by Laura Grace Walden? Okay, this is a chapter about work, play, and other essentials. I liked this chapter. I really thought it was incredibly meaningful. Felt that it really pertained and captured sort of the essence of homeschooling and why homeschooling is so successful on so many levels.
Yes, although I did spend a little bit of time a little guilt-ridden, but then I felt better by the end of it. But I think my guilt-ridden is probably common to a lot of people who have perhaps teenage sons, very, very interested in technology. I felt really bad during that time and was like, but then they started, you know, talking about how technology is good. So then I felt a little bit better.
There you go. I did think it was interesting how she noted that in the past, children played a different role in the family than children do today. Mm-hmm. I mean, for sure, so many people don't even get married today unless they are indeed actually planning to have children. Mm-hmm. So therefore, children oftentimes do become the focus of a union. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting because sometimes when they become our focus, then they become those spoiled princess brat things. Mm-hmm. my daughter is sitting here today in the background, and if you hear the odd occasional laughing and snickering, it's because Megan is agreeing.
Yes,
princess.
Agreeing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
So, do your kids have chores?
Yes.
Do yours?
I try. The list is on the wall. It's not always full of stickers, though.
There you go. It is a difficult task sometimes to get our young people motivated to do chores. But I think sometimes when we give them chores that actually are meaningful chores and the family is dependent upon the work being done, then I think it perhaps is easier for them to be motivated for it. My daughter, for example, is required to go out and feed our horses every day. And let me tell you, there are four sets of eyes on her every morning. And if she doesn't feed them, they will certainly let her know. And it has real life consequences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an important job and Megan takes the task very seriously.
I'm sure the horses appreciate that, especially on very cold mornings like we had.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you guys pay your kids an allowance?
Nope.
Yeah. We don't pay we never paid our kids an allowance either, but they do get money that they get to manage.
Yep. Right. Owen did just this last summer start to be paid for a new chore that he had, which is mowing the front and the back lawn. And so he would do that, and then our neighbor also would pay him to do his occasionally and things like that. So that was the first time he's been paid for it because it was a new kind of thing. We have a very steep hill. So, you know, the fact of having a 16-year-old who can finally push the lawnmower back up the hill because, you know, he's not a very big lad. So that was new. So he does get paid for that.
Yeah, but other household chores, no.
Unloading, loading dishwasher, laundry, wiping things down, running the vacuum now and again, that's just all part of it.
Yeah, that's the way we have always talked to our kids about it as well, is that you live in this house, you contribute to the household, you are one of the wheels on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I always pictured that sort of homeschooling bus, you know, the converted old school bus.
Yeah.
You are one of the wheels on that bus. Yeah. And if you're flat, then the bus don't go.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it is interesting, she noted, that many kids in our society today don't help out on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's because they have too many time constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So they're too busy doing activities and events and play dates and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Sometimes parents feel guilty making their children do things or have chores. And some parents feel it's just easier to do it themselves.
Oh, there have certainly been those. And actually, I have to fight with my husband over that one. So not that we fight, but he'll just, somebody will do something kind of half-assed. And then he'll just be like, I'll just do it. And it's like, no, you call them back. But I just want to get it done. I don't care. You know, you call them back to do it right. Mm-hmm. I mean, either that or it's then serving a half-cooked chicken for dinner and saying, I hope everybody enjoys that. I made a...
The botulism afterwards will be... Oh, Sam and Ella, sorry.
Yeah, you're inviting Sam and Ella to dinner. But yeah, it's like, you know, you don't do it halfway. You do it the best you can. You may not actually be able to do it as good as someone else, but you know when someone has just sort of swished past that.
And how do you hold your children accountable to the chores that they do, Deanne?
Well, they live in a pigsty.
Hi! I have one of those, too. I recently gave a disclaimer to someone new we're meeting that, you know, we are a wonderful family as a group and individually. We have many wonderful qualities. Organization and, like, the staying on it to regularly clean, like, this on Tuesday, this... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're quite big enough to, I mean, just the one rule, if you're done with it, put it back before you take anything else out. Mm-hmm. It seems like an insurmountable rule for them to comprehend, and then they turn around and they're playing in the classroom, or they're playing in our living room, or the dining room, or my room, and no, this is our communal space. Mm-hmm. If it's too messy in your room, go do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't always get done, let me tell you. Most times you can't open the bedroom doors. It's like they're teenagers already. I loathe the 16-year-old time, but yeah.
Actually, I have found with both of my children... I have found that both my children, as they got older, their rooms became cleaner.
Better.
I haven't. So let's talk about ages, because I don't think we actually ask how old are your children.
11, 9, and 6.
Okay.
Mine are
42.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We all have one of those. mine are 23 and 15.
He's 24.
23.
And mine are 16 and 21.
It is interesting. I thought that in the little box that she has on page 55 there, mm-hmm. talks about how research is bearing out the wisdom of giving children responsibility in their early years. Mm-hmm. That basically one of the common predictors of adult happiness is having chores in childhood. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, when our long-term goal is to have healthy, happy, mm-hmm. productive young adults, then maybe that will help ease our guilt over making our children have chores and holding them accountable for those chores, is the fact that, you know, it produces the end result we actually mm-hmm. want, which is competent young people. I remember as a teenager going on a trip with our grade 12 class to Europe, and one of the girls on the trip had no idea how to do laundry.
Yes.
She had mm-hmm. never done laundry, and she was 18 years old.
Yep. I've had a friend like that too, and it's like they have no idea how that machine works.
Yep.
And that I just don't ever want my children to move out mm-hmm. and not know how to clean their clothes or cook mm-hmm. a meal or clean up after it.
Well, and I laugh because our education system right now is so geared towards self-esteem. Mm. Hello, self-esteem is achieved when you can do stuff. Mm-hmm. If you can't do crap, you have no self-esteem. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how much somebody tells you you're wonderful or you're sweet mm-hmm. or, gee, you're doing a great job or whatever. You have to know internally right. that you are capable of doing something, mm-hmm. accomplishing something, and that it is a task well done.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it is interesting. We have had lots of times, and maybe you've even heard this from some of the parents sitting in the common area. How do you get your kids to work? right? That internal motivation. How do you get them to do the things that need to be done? Mm-hmm. But when, again, the task is part of the family need, when it is something that the child is willing to do. So, you know, I've always tried to gear our chores and things like that towards things the kids are willing to do.
Well, everybody has some things that they just hate.
Yep. Oh, that'd be dishes.
You know what? And that is it. Sometimes it's folding the laundry. Sometimes it's putting the laundry away. Sometimes it's cleaning the bathroom. In my house, nobody else cleans the bathroom. It's my job. They hate it. It will, I swear, the toilet would just hop up and speak to them and introduce them before ever even dawned on them to clean it. So I have always done that. But, you know, my husband has absolutely no problems loading, unloading, scrubbing counters, you know, vacuuming. Again, it never dawns on people to sweep and mop the kitchen floor, so that usually runs to me unless I pointedly ask someone, but it doesn't dawn on them.
Yeah.
And frankly, Owen likes to do that as long as I'll remind him, but it's like, oh yeah, that needs to be done. We have a big dog. It's muddy. You know. So yeah, everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses.
Yeah.
Play to them or rotate them if everybody hates it.
You know, as kids get older, they need more to do. Mm-hmm. And it is a common thing. How many times... You know, little guys, we've got them engaged in activities and events and this and that. And then as they get to be teenagers, we kind of leave them on their own. Mm-hmm. Or we don't actually give them stuff to do. Mm-hmm. Well, they find stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not always stuff that we are approving of. So I think, you know, the more that teenagers can do, the more confident they feel, and the more it helps them overcome anxiety about becoming an independent adult. That or the other side of that, we also have to be careful not to overschedule, and that's the other part of the chapter. And it talks about, and on page 57, there's a little one there, it says decompression, where kids move from school to homeschooling.
Yes.
And you've done that recently, Deanne, so maybe you will be able to speak to this, but where there needs to be a time period where you just kind of forget school and discover who your people are, mm-hmm. who your kids are.
I think a good bit of last year was that I was too scared to try the method of, is it de-schooling?
De-schooling,
right?
Yeah. That's what we've always called it.
De-schooling, yeah. I was too afraid to do that, but I can see where we got behind in a couple of subjects by the time June crept up on us. When you look back on it, it was definitely because you go through those times with one or all three of them where they definitely needed that decompression time, and they were also a little bit messed up too and sort of without direction when it came to... Yeah, but we're used to starting class at 8:40 in the morning, and then there's a couple of breaks, and then there's lunchtime at the same time every day. And, you know, they look at the clock and say, but it's 3:30, and I'm done now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sorry, is everything in your agenda done? Because you spent most of the day fooling around, so it's not done, you know? Yeah. So there's definitely been an awful lot of that going on, for sure. I don't know that everything is working out all that much better this year. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I get too afraid to just sit back and say, you know what, if it's 3 days you don't do anything this week, then it's 3 days you don't do anything, and it's all going to be okay. Yeah. We can make up for that in the end. It's very scary to do that, because then you sit there and you know we're the only ones on the entire street that are doing this, and they're all sitting in school from 8 to 3, and gosh, they came home when they accomplished so much more than you did today. But then there are times when I go through our paperwork on the weekend, or I'm writing out our monthly submissions for math or language arts, and I think, wow, we did all that.
Yeah.
You know, or I talk to so-and-so's kid, and I think, you guys did nothing today. You were at school from 8:30 to 3:30, and you did nothing. You colored.
But they showed up, and they breathed, and so they were counted as There.
Yeah. Well, and the other side of it is, we just had a family recently that they decided with their eldest child that she wanted to attend a brick and mortar school. She'd never been. She wanted to go. The parents said, okay, let's give it a shot. And I guess she came home from school and said, Mom, we did nothing today. We spent the whole day and did nothing. Mm-hmm. And how she... the parent was sort of struggling a little bit because she said, I was very proud of the fact that we were able to accomplish a lot and we learned a lot and my children did a lot in a very short period of time, compressed time, because they didn't spend all day homeschooling. But at the same time, she said, I was then really worried about what the heck was going on over there.
Yeah.
Why weren't they learning anything?
But you know, then we have the alternate story there too, where... someone went back into high school to a regular school.
Yes.
And came home and was just like, I'm like, so how'd it go? And this type of thing. And he was like, it was great. He goes, it's so much easier. I had to do so much less work.
Yes.
So sometimes even the overscheduling of the work we expect from our kids.
Right.
Because, again, we always feel like we have to prove and we're constantly being judged by the grocery store clerk, the, you know, the in-laws. And so we have to constantly be proving that they're doing
productive. Right.
And, it's just like,
And yet at the same time, a very good point is made in the chapter that some of the best moments around homeschooling come from when we're bored.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's important to have those moments of complete and utter boredom.
and I tried to kind of think about that. When there's all kinds of things, you know, there's soccer, there's, you know, classes here, there's the schoolwork stack at home and you know, that kind of thing. But when was the last time any of us in my family really allowed ourselves to be bored?
I think it's important. You talked about that a little bit, about those moments of boredom.
And I think I mentioned there in the email about it that it's produced some of their most imaginative times and creative times, because part of it is that there are the three of them and they're fairly close in age and they do everything together. And when we compare that against a lot of their friends are single child families and they're all in the school system, and the number of times I'll get a phone call or an email or a text message from that parent saying, they're bored out of their mind, can I borrow one of your children? They're beating on the outside of the door, can you come out and play with so-and-so because they're bored? And mine don't ever think to go, they have to be really bored before they think they're going to phone someone up and go play, or they're going to go outside and knock on the door, because they're occupied with each other.
Yeah.
You know, and then those times when you think that they haven't had a very productive day with respect to their school program or what's in that backpack that needs to be done, oftentimes when you calm down about it, you'll think, yeah, but they did that play. Like, I had to go upstairs and they did a performance for me, or they invented a song, or they covered the entire classroom in Lego figurines or something like that, you know? Yep. So,
and sometimes I think, because maybe many homeschooling families are not certificated teachers with years of training, we tend to undervalue the importance of play. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes put a little more value on that piece of paper as opposed to that play that was just produced. But when you think about it, the kids had to come up with the script. Mm-hmm. There's incredible language skills. Mm-hmm. They had to figure out how it would work, the sequencing, the timing. They had to come up with props, and they had to come up with scenery, and they had to deal with issues and problems and
divas.
It's a very...
We're cooperating with each other.
But it's a very, very complex situation. Mm-hmm. And some of our kids do it so naturally that we tend to undervalue the importance of it. Mm-hmm. I noticed in here, she also talks a little bit about sometimes being careful about, you know, when our kids do something really well, and I'm on page 61, where...
Skipped right ahead.
Where, for example, she's talking about, you know, that a child is a really talented young cook. Mm-hmm. And so you tend to say, oh, everything you make is perfect, honey. Mm-hmm. And we tend to, you know, just we emphasize instead of
We judge the whole child instead of that particular skill set on that particular day.
And then it ends up being that kids go, oh, I don't want to cook anymore because last time I burnt something and I'm not perfect anymore. Mm-hmm. And we know, I mean, real life is not like that. Dang, you make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Even the most incredibly knowledgeable and professional people make mistakes.
Right. Hey, I made one unfortunate dinner. Even the dog wouldn't.
Oh, that is bad.
Oh, it was so bad.
Because I've met your dog.
Yeah. And it was. It was like, oh, well, we'll just mix it. It's got lots of meat and vegetables. It'll be good for him. We'll mix that.
Yeah.
He wouldn't eat it.
Yeah. So it's important, though, that we emphasize the effort rather than the end product. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes, you know, the end product isn't working out, even mm-hmm. though the kid is putting in a lot of effort.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm Gladwell, in his book, what one? Wasn't Blink? What one was it?
Outliers.
Thanks, Megan.
See, she's now in on the group.
Talks about how it takes 10,000 hours to achieve mastery. So I think sometimes when we share that kind of information with our kids, okay, honey, you know, I realize that you're still getting this math problem wrong, or long division is not working for you right at the moment, mm-hmm. but we need to keep trying. Mm-hmm. It's like playing a piano. Yeah. You don't do it perfectly the first time you sit down. Mm-hmm. It takes hours and hours to achieve mastery. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and we've talked about this before in other podcasts, sometimes it's a matter of age and maturity.
Yep.
You know, there are kids who are not introduced to reading, for example, mm-hmm. until much later. In one of our previous episodes, we talked about a study where kids were not introduced to math concepts until much later.
Yeah.
And they did equally well because it depended upon maturity.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just rote practice. They had to actually understand what they were doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes, it comes at different times for different people.
Yep.
Today we were doing, we had a board meeting and we were discussing our audited financial statements.
What fun.
What fun. And you could see that various board members were at different stages. They're all adults. But their level of comprehension was different. So you know what? Even in the real world, in the grown-up world, we all still are at different states of mastery for different skills.
Oh, yeah. I do not have a good math skill set. I require other people to help shore me up in those parts. But I have other great skill sets and other things, and I help shore them up in those. So it's a team.
And I think it's important that we point those things out to our kids, mm-hmm. right? That, oh, you know, that person doesn't do that perfect. Because sometimes I think we can expect too much from our kids, and we expect them to be perfect, and they're not, and they make mistakes. And we have to be okay with that. It's not a reflection of us mm-mm. or our teaching, you know, that they are in the process of learning and growing, and part of learning is making mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and frankly, sometimes we were doing our high school group yesterday, and the kids were calculating a new car ad and what was the difference between a purchase outright and a lease and how much more would they spend and things like that. We were talking about that. And I asked one of the gals to hop up because it's a very tiny room and she could reach the board. And I go, can you do that? And she was, you know, but one that I said to her, I go, after a bit, I'm like, you know, don't panic. I don't know the right answer. I'm not going to go, oh, no, I'm curious. I have no idea. And it would take me so long to work this out because I can do it. It's going to take a long time and it might be wrong. So, you know, because I'm like, well, did you work out that and that? And she'd be like, oh, no, I didn't that. And then somebody else suggested something else. And as a group, we got it all done because it's also very nerve-wracking standing in front of even a small group of your friends.
Yep.
And so we kind of all muddled along through it. But, you know, at one point she kind of looked back at me like, am I right? And I'm like,
I don't know.
I have no idea. I'm dying to find out what the answer is. But, you know, immediately you could see her shoulders drop and go, oh, okay. So this is a team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's important that we share with our kids that we don't always know,
mm-mm.
but there is a way that as an adult we have learned to acquire knowledge,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's important that our kids see us learning,
mm-hmm.
They see us going through the steps of acquiring knowledge or skill.
Well, how many times as a parent have you been quizzed by your child? They'll come out with their assignment or something, and they'll go, what's the blah, 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 blah? And, you know, we're getting old, so it's like chemistry things or it's math thing. It's like, and I'll be like, I don't know, but we can look it up. And it's like, no, I just want to know what's blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't just carry that here.
Yeah.
I have to go look it up.
So how can we suggest to our listeners is a way that they can help their children achieve their goals? She suggests writing down the goal, learning more about it, so research, developing a personal plan, and then noticing the effects of focus and perseverance. Do you guys write down your goals?
No. I don't. Sorry.
It would just get lost anyway.
Well, sometimes I think, though, have you found as a homeschooling mom that sometimes, you know, you don't have goals anymore, right? Like, it's just sort of, you're living from moment to moment.
Survive the day.
Exactly. Yeah. So sometimes our own personal goals aren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget even, you know, the goals that we might have in mind for our kids.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, writing them down is good, and it is something that, you know, I constantly intend to do because I think it helps keep you focused on the task instead of overwhelmed with the amount of things that need to be done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know you're really good at this because I've always teased you for years about your emails. You know, put in a load of laundry, swept them up the kitchen floor, da la 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 la, and it's this list of what I've gotten done, and you know, sometimes she'll just get an email, you win.
Yeah. But it's how I keep
reply to this email. Check.
Yep. Exactly.
But, you know, it's how she keeps accountable.
Yep.
And as much as I giggle about it, I wish I could sometimes just do it without thinking about it when it's not a convenient time to do it, like right now.
We sat down as a family and did a bucket list.
Oh.
And that was very interesting. We kept it on the fridge. And basically, it was interesting because not every time I opened the fridge door, but quite often I would sort of stand there, mostly while I was pondering what the heck we were going to have for dinner. Mm-hmm. Anyways, would open the fridge and I would think, oh, right. You know, it was on the bucket list to visit a certain place. Oh, you know, if we're thinking about a holiday next year, maybe we should consider trying to go there. Or, hey, we accomplished that. Oh, woo! Well, I didn't remember that. Right, we did that. And having the ability to check it off and to celebrate that we had achieved something that was on the list. So it was kind of a cool experience to have that there. It was interesting, though, because some of Megan's bucket items changed as she got older. One of them was supposed to be to go to Paris and paint the Eiffel Tower.
Paint it.
Sure.
There's a contract. My husband's not going to get that contract.
Yeah, they go through a lot of paint on that puppy every
year. They go through a lot of paint,
As she got older, it was no longer an important thing. And so I kept saying, we need to go to Paris. And Megan was like, why the heck do you want to go to Paris? I don't want to go to Paris, but you did. No, I don't. So even bucket lists need
I've
to be
moved
updated.
On.
The school that my kids used to go to would have them fill out sort of their own personal goal sheet for every new, when they were about to begin a new chapter in every subject.
Yep.
And so at the top would just be some general objectives that would be covered in that chapter so they knew what kind of information they would be covering. Mm-hmm. And then they would have to put down a goal for what they hope to achieve, but it was with respect to a mark.
Oh.
Mm.
So I found that with my oldest, marks mean nothing to him. He's always been a high-achieving student. He's always been quite bright and capable, but the numerical mark and goal setting means nothing to him because if he did even 1% less than what was on there, then he experienced so much letdown. He took it so personally, and he's a big negative talker, negative self-talk in his head. And it works quite well with my younger two. I don't know if it's age or just personality difference, but I can see that method on this page working quite well for them. I don't know if the problem with my older son came about because you would get your mark back, and if it wasn't what you had hoped for, it expected, or written down, what they did was they just made you do a rewrite. So you could take it for a week, and you could just do a rewrite on your final test, let's say. Mm-hmm. Whereas perhaps they should have revisited the rubric and his work and decided, well, where do you think that the plan went wrong, or what could you change about it, maybe re-strategize or something like that. So that part of it was never, ever developed in him. So marks mean nothing to him. Grades mean nothing to him. He's highly unmotivated at the moment as an 11-year-old. And that's really hard.
Yeah. It is interesting. It's one of the reasons why at Phoenix it has always been our policy for grades 1 through 9 that we don't emphasize marks.
Right.
It's rich descriptive feedback because, quite frankly, it's more realistic of the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do a report for your boss and the boss doesn't look at it and go, yeah, you got 60 out of 100, 60%. Nope, they're going to toss it back to you and say, not good enough. Like, you missed this piece, or we need this, or you forgot to include this chart or whatever. Quick, go at it. So that's more realistic and a more real life scenario than having a grade.
Yeah.
So plus the other thing I found when I was doing my own teaching practicums and things was when you gave a grade to a student, they looked at the grade and they chucked the assignment in the garbage or wherever. You know, so, oh, this was an 89. Okay, good enough, pass, great, love the idea, great, okay. But they didn't look at sort of the comments internally and what else could have been added or whatever. Conversely, the same, if a kid got a 52%, they went, oh, balled it up and filed it in the round bin. And so it became representative of who they thought they were instead of really the fact that, okay, if with a bit more effort or a little bit of improvement here or a quote here or a graph or something, this would have been so much better.
You've been listening to The Squatcast with Jill Mann and Diana Stinn, special guest Deanne Brosnan. But we're going to take a few minutes to refill our coffee cup and ask you to do the same. So come on back and join us for part two of this interview on Free Range Learning by Laura Grace Weldon and your hosts, Jill Mann and Diana Stinn.